Many passages of the Bible seemed almost banal, or seemed almost obvious. How were these passages to be understood? Well, what Ambrose builds is a doctrine that many passages of Scripture are symbolic. They hide, they conceal layer upon layer upon layer of meaning. And according to one's ability with the method of allegory, and according to one's learning, one can extract more and more meaning. In other words, what is there immediately on the surface is not to be ignored, but is never going to exhaust the meaning of a passage of Scripture. So, the introduction really into the West of allegory. Crucial contribution of Ambrose. The second great Latin father is Jerome. Born in 342, he dies in 420. We met him last time as the translator of the Vulgate Bible, the Latin translation authorized by Pope Damasus. That, of course, is his greatest contribution. But we might just mention that here we have another Roman blue blood who is attracted to the service of the church. Jerome, in fact, becomes not a bishop, but a monk. He wrote numerous letters. His letters survive. His letters were in later times much admired. And in these letters, he explained a lot of very complicated Christian problems that were existing in his time. And Jerome is particularly interesting to us as well, because he created a kind of, in Rome at least, a kind of a salon society where noble, highborn Roman women came and received instruction from him. Now, it's interesting, too, that Jerome was one of the most highly prized of all Roman writers later in the Renaissance, and he was prized precisely for the elegance, the almost incomparable elegance of his Latin. So we do want to bear in mind that these Christian writers did not leave the cultural attainments of classical civilization behind them. The greatest of the Latin fathers, and indeed, perhaps after St. Paul, the second most influential, or after Paul, the most influential, with Paul, one of the two most influential writers in the entire history of Christianity, was Aurelius Augustinus, St. Augustine. Born in North Africa in 354, died there in 430. He was born to a middling sort of family. His mother, Monica, was a devout Christian. His father was not. The family didn't really have the means to provide him an education. Other relatives stepped into the breach and provided him with the funds that he needed. Here is an interesting example of somebody who was able to rise pretty high through talent in the late Roman world. Now, this wasn't an opportunity everyone would have had, and certainly not everyone would have had the talent that Augustine did, but here is someone who does not start with, as it were, a silver spoon in his mouth, and therefore many advantages in life. Well, he studied in the local schools and became a teacher of rhetoric. He eventually moved on to Rome, which he saw, not surprisingly, as sort of greener pastures, and then on to Milan, which, as I mentioned a moment ago, was a very important city, indeed often the imperial capital in late antiquity. Now, in Milan, he fell under the influence of Ambrose. Augustine had had a kind of a conventional, despite his mother's deep faith, he had a kind of a conventional pagan education. He didn't have much interest in Christianity. He thought, for example, that Paul's epistles were appallingly written, which, truth to tell, in some ways, they are, at least as models of style. He thought that the Old Testament was full of old wives' tales and no serious person could possibly take any of that sort of thing seriously. He went to Milan and he'd heard a great deal about Ambrose, about this preacher Ambrose. Now, Augustine's a professor of rhetoric, so obviously the ability to speak well in public would be something that interested him a great deal. So he went to hear Ambrose. He said, "I went to mock," and came away converted. Ambrose gradually, well, I suppose we should say, I was going to say he gradually won him over. I think Ambrose began the process by which Augustine was won over. Augustine was a prolific writer. One late antique writer said, if anyone tells you he's read all of St. Augustine's books, you know he is a liar. He was not a systematic thinker. That is to say, he never sat down and said, I'm going to explain Christianity sort of from the beginning to the end, the whole deal. He responded to crises. He responded to problems. He responded to questions. Now, he lived in a time that threw up plenty of problems and crises and questions. But the point is, he was not a systematic thinker. He addressed himself to individual problems as these problems presented themselves to him.